God of our forebears, who paved the way for our being in this place, help us now to give up complacency, truly love one another, and hunger and thirst after righteousness. As we come to you, may your bread of heaven and cup of salvation feed our souls with peace and unspeakable joy. In the name of God, Creator, Redeemer, and Sustainer. Amen. I am just a little suspicious about our leadership's timing away from the pulpit when the parable of the rich man comes up in the lectionary. It appears that every time this challenging gospel lesson is to be preached, our dear rector, Phil Burchard, and our dear associate rector, Kristen Krantz, are conveniently presiding on vacation or on a mission trip, leaving this sermon for resident clergy. I have been here before. Although I could have gone in a couple of directions using one of the other two lessons and was tempted, the Spirit moved me to preach this hard but important message. There are many warm and fuzzy gospel passages that simply delight the overwhelming majority of us. We love to hear about the great reward that we will have waiting for us in heaven. Or when we are blessed in the Beatitudes, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. However, today's gospel is not a warm and fuzzy one. We are reminded today that the gospel does not function just to coddle us and make us feel good. It is also designed to trouble us, to move us from a state of complacency or resistance that hinders us from being better, more divine. Here Jesus presents a pesky gospel that chides and chastens, compelling us to consider how we understand the material things in our lives that may lead us to greed and selfish excess. While we as a country have engaged the difficult subject of race and racism in the last few weeks, in many ways, the conversation about our money and what we do with material possessions is a more difficult one. After all, capital reform is often ignored in this country or dismissed as a socialist evil. And what is sometimes identified as race really has to do with class disparity. So, All Souls, this morning I invite you to go with me in a deep place of introspection about how we live with what we call our money, our possessions. Here Jesus outlines the problem of selfish greed in this parable. Let's hear the gospel again. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Friend, who set me to be a judge or an arbiter over you?" And Jesus said to them, "Take care. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions." Then Jesus told them a parable. The land of a rich man produced abundantly. And he thought to himself, "This man, what should I do, for I have no place to store my crops?" Then the man said, I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your life is being demanded of you. And the things that you have prepared, whose will they be? So it is with those who store up treasures for themselves but are not rich toward God. Here Jesus gives us a parable, which is not just a story, but one that compares a current situation with another, largely through metaphor. Biblical scholar Robert Funk asserts that parables offer meaning to us based on how we place ourselves in the story. It appears that Jesus pivots in his response to the brother's upset about being left out of his inheritance and gives us this story to consider. On a personal level, Jesus is clear about two things. One, that one can acquire a lot of wealth, but that wealth is not a guarantee for continuance of life. And two, material possessions are only temporal. We will not take any of it with us, and the wealth has the potential of drawing us away from our spiritual treasure, being rich with God. This turning away is also noted in the Hosea passage. Israel is identified as losing their way, becoming unfaithful to God and creating a God from a material thing that will not last. When I consider this story of the rich man, I think it has implications that go beyond the mere personal. So what might this gospel say to each of us individually and to us as a nation? Metaphorically, this rich man is this rich country, the United States. While I think that we can all appreciate many great things about this country, when we examine its aggressive climb to power and status, we cannot avoid looking at the greed of its past, predicated upon the slave trade and slavery. The subsequent racial caste system formed the current economic disparity that, like in this parable, allows some a share of the inheritance while others are left without. Like the actions of the rich man, the obsession for more and more and more has placed the United States on top of the world, saddling itself with the sin of greed. A study by the World Resources Institute reveals that although the U.S. only makes up 4% of the world's population, it uses a third of the world's resources. And despite the current economic downturn, compared to the rest of the world, the United States has barns full of crops, grains, and goods. If you need convincing, just pause the next time you shop and eat in the superstores, Target and such, restaurants, fast food chains, and look at the goods and grains that overflow into our lives. When you are at your supermarket, look at the abundance of food stockpiled on shelves from the floor to the ceiling. This is evidence of a cultural attitude that you can never have too much. The more you get, the more you should want. It is not enough to be rich. The trend is to be super rich. Although class disparity may be increasing, it is not unlike greed existed at the time of Jesus in Palestine or the beginning of the last century in this country. As a lover of presidential and first lady history, this summer I have been reading Ada Donnell's Life of Theodore Roosevelt, entitled Lion in the White House. In reading this history, I discovered that the battle with the super rich in a tough economy is not only a battle our current president is facing. During the progressive era of his populist appeal, President Roosevelt agonized over his own Republican Party's excesses, writing, quote, "We cannot submit to the domination in the Republican Party of those selfish interests which have long felt that the government was simply an instrument to further their ends," end quote. Donald writes that Roosevelt lobbied Republicans to protect the working and middle classes. We now live in a culture that is becoming more and more extreme, with the working poor on the one hand and the super rich on the other. And many perceive a powerful Congress persisting in finding ways to provide favors for the super rich while being hostile to raising a minimum wage to $8 per hour and offer work programs for many honest, hardworking people in this country. We have witnessed the resistance to engage the culture's sin of greed and class tensions in recent political economic battles. As I hear the gospel, I wonder, where is our culture's spiritual treasure? How is it rich towards God? In our culture that builds larger barns and withholds goods and grains from faithful, hardworking people with lower incomes and retirements needing adequate housing, health care, and food, it does not appear that this is rich toward God. This summer in the Bay Area, we have heard this very message from employees at BART. On the dawn of another potential BART strike, we find that those with less are pleading with the rich and powerful for a share of money and benefits for the work that they do. Many frustrated passengers can only see the workers as having interrupted their means of transportation to work without considering how those building larger barns can make the difference. The haves clamoring to get more and more while maintaining a lack of attention to and access for poor working class and the disappearing middle class of blacks, Latinos, whites, Asians, and Native peoples. Like the culture around us, in our gathering of stuff, we can forget God, our spiritual treasure. We find ourselves like the rich man, seduced into having more and more stuff, playing the lottery, investing in more stocks and bonds, opposing any taxes that could help the less fortunate based on the premise that everything we have, we did it by ourselves, for ourselves, earning it without considering the unjust systems that privilege some at the expense of many. In this current climate of tearing down small barns to build bigger ones, we must ask ourselves the question, how have we lost our way and compassion that we would turn our backs on fellow human beings? We must remain mindful and prayerful of our spiritual treasure with God, lest the very nature of money and its function in our lives pull us into an abyss where we become more obsessed on more for the sake of more and less thoughtful of the needs and rights of others. Jesus says this very thing throughout the story of this rich man whose crops, grains, and goods drew him inward. Clearly, he had more than he needed. Jesus described it as abundance. This word abundance is a tricky one. There is a church movement called the Prosperity Gospel that you may have heard about in the last decade. These Christian followers have been interpreting the Gospels in some interesting ways. Rather than understand that as Christians, we are called to help others with our means are more blessed to give than to receive practice, they understand the passage, Jesus came so that we might have life and have it more abundantly, as his coming to make us rich. Now, I'm not sure how they read in this very passage Jesus' words that our life does not consist in the abundance of possessions, but they appear to have figured it out. One of the ministers has described Jesus as being rich because he wore a seamless garment. Sisters and brothers, please understand that I am not romanticizing poverty and saying that one cannot be a faithful Christian with means. We all know or have seen much suffering from the evils of poverty and know about affluent Christians who give to make this world a better place. And besides, if I preached such a gospel, I would get kicked out of the Episcopal Church. But a gospel that distorts the very message here of acquiring more and more for self without the focus on God is failing to take to heart Jesus' message. For inasmuch as you do not feed the hungry, provide water for the thirsty, be active in this country so that there is health care for all who are sick, visit those in prison, and work for economic and public education reform so that high levels of incarceration may be reduced, you do it to Jesus. Jesus' words remind us not to lose sight of our spiritual treasure in being rich toward God. Gospel cries out to us today to do spiritual inventory and look at ourselves, asking in what ways are we like the rich man. The rich man thought to himself about himself. While he had more than he needed, there is no response of thanks to God for his abundance and, moreover, about sharing what he had to improve the lives of others. In his preparation to hoard all that he had and find pleasure in his material possessions without building a spiritual treasure that points toward God and others, his time ran out. In the end, it did not matter how much stuff he had. He died and left it all. The Jewish philosopher Martin Buber assign meaning to the idea that we find God in the other, the I-thou relationship. We find God in our relationships with those around us, sharing what has been given to us so that all our lives are made rich through the gifts of love, care, friendship, money, and work. In this way of being in the world, we commit ourselves, our souls, our bodies in the service to God, our spiritual treasure. In Colossians, we hear the Apostle Paul saying, "Seek those things that are of God, not of things on this earth." The last decade has shown us that material things are not guaranteed. Many of us carry the pain from those losses. Homes that went into foreclosure, stocks that dried up, jobs that ended. However, those of us who have built a spiritual treasure know that this is not the final word. We are here today because there is something deep down inside that sustains us through disappointments, lost dreams, and failures in life. It is a deep abiding faith that lets us know that God is faithful and makes us know in so many surprising ways that all is not lost. This is the hope and abundant life that Christ has stored in us. sealing us with the knowledge that we will find restoration. We take none of our material possessions from this world. From dust we came, and dust we shall return. But we stand on a promise that when this earthly house of this tabernacle is dissolved, we have a building of God, a house not made with hands in the heavens. Today we pause because we knew one who was rich with God, who did not lose sight of God from barns of more and more temporal material goods, but as the songwriter wrote, built his hopes on things eternal. Robert N. Bella knew God, and through his lifetime of teaching and service to others and God in this place, at Harvard, the University of California, Berkeley, and throughout the land, built spiritual mansions. May our sights be also so clear in building our spiritual treasure, so that when we are called home, we will hear God not saying to us, "You fool," but like he said to our dear friend, "Well done."